It was a volatile week for commodities with double-digit swings in both wheat and soybeans. Is the market discovering new near-term tops and bottoms? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Brian Hoops, President and Senior Market Analyst for Midwest Market Solutions in Yankton, South Dakota.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Friday, July soybeans broke to the upside through all major moving averages. Will that breakout have enough legs to challenge the May high of 620 at some point this month, Matt Bennett?
Well, I definitely think today was a shock to many people. It ran a lot of shorts out of the market. Funds stepped in and bought, up to 14,000 by noon alone. I don't know what they ended up on the day, but I think if we come in on Monday and we have, the weather forecast still hot and dry with chance of ridging in the western corn belt, I think you're probably going to see all the commodities stay strong. I think beans, who can guess what beans are going to do after what they did today? I think they're going to keep on going if we have the weather for it.
Wheat trade this week was tremendously volatile. Midweek, July wheat made a 50% retracement from the May 23rd high, and then on Friday, it surged upward through the 62.5% retracement level as Informa pegged U.S. winter wheat production at 1.3 billion bushels, 23 million less than USDA's current estimate. Is another run at the 433 contract high possible on supply concerns, or will that run to the highs now need to be demand-driven? Ellen Dearden.
I think we need to see demand perk up in here, and certainly the export side of things has been pretty shy on the U.S. Supplies moving out. I think that Informa was right on the nose. I think that we're going to see a big decline on this next crop report, but I'm afraid that we need the demand side to kick in a little bit more.
Paul Cooley, your estimation of the wheat contract situation.
Dave, all my opinions are myself and not necessarily ADM or ADM Investor Services opinions, but my general scope of the wheat market is that from a fundamental point of view, it's always risky to be long 30 days before wheat harvest, but from a other point of view is that we do know that there is a shrinking supply of wheat, and we do know that some of the areas in the northwest part of the Corn Belt have had below average rainfall for the month, and our private meteorologists say that they don't see much rain till June the 15th. And I also asked them, I said, where is the big questions coming from your elite customers? And they said that you hit the button, Paul. It's a very concerned weather forecast, and that probably even includes North Dakota and South Dakota as well.
So wheat still has legs based on supply side in your estimation.
That's right.
Will this upcoming Friday USDA crop production report, Paul, reveal some bullish information? And if so, what?
Well, it will be interesting to see just how much they do cut the western wheat production. And at the present time, we're even starting to see some soft red winter wheat turning. We aren't getting any reports of any rust issues. So we do think that it's going to be some have and have not have, meaning good crops in the soft wheat areas and smaller production in the hard red winter wheat.
Ellen?
And on this June 9th report, they're going to reevaluate harvested acres in Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. So that may give us some more new information. But I still contend that the supply side's pretty well dialed in right now.
July soybeans had a high this week of 610, a low of 574 3/4. July beans finishing the week at 609, up 26.5 from last week. Nov beans at 633 1/4 were up 25 1/4 from a week ago. The rally in the soybean pit was largely fund driven this week. Why were the funds buying in your estimation, Matt?
Well, I think, you know, we've been range-bound pretty well for quite some time. And I think, you know, yesterday we bounced, and it was interesting to see. You know, it appeared that we were headed lower, and we've tried to break through, you know, on the November bean, $6. And we haven't had a whole lot of luck doing it. You know, whenever you look in this morning, you have pretty good export numbers, and we also have a dry weather forecast that gets people excited. And then, of course, once you're able to get some upward movement, you hit buy stops, people panic that have been short. There's a lot of people been short beans for quite some time, and they got out today, and that, you know, kind of created the pendulum effect.
Soybeans may have been led to the upside by the products. Friday meal opened through its 20 and 50-day moving averages and hit three-month highs. Has soybeans found a near-term bottom at 575 1/2, Ellen?
I think we probably have. I would not be surprised to see July beans another 30 to 40 cents higher, November maybe even a little bit more upside than that. I like the fact that the meal, which has really been the dog on this complex, took off, and it has a nice little 8-week cycle that seemed to have bottomed the middle of this week. So I'm not surprised to see the meal go. I think we've got another $10 or $15 there too.
July corn, a high on the week of 260, a low of 247 1/2. July corn finishing the week at 259 1/2, up 5 1/2 from last week. December corn at 285 was up 6 from a week ago. Technical action late this week in corn was positive. It finished at its highest level in 2 weeks. Are we heading to a retest of the May 263 high of the July basis and or a run at the December contract high of 287 1/4, Paul?
You know, as long as that weather forecaster is stingy with rainfall in those far western areas, I'm going to say we're going to see some $3 corn on the December futures sometime between, sometime in that July-August timeframe. I'm also of the opinion that the western Midwest did plant more corn in the ground than they did last year. I think Sparks will need, and the USDA will ultimately raise the acreage. But we all know that with the demand and with the tremendous, potential weather problem, you shave 2 or 3 bushels off of what the trend line yields, and we have a new ball game called price rally.
Some of the best basis levels in the U.S. right now are here in Illinois. Matt, why have they held up better than in other areas of the country, and will they continue to be firmer than in other areas of the country throughout the summer?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, you know, we've talked about in the past Iowa with their ethanol plants that they've had a pretty good basis. We've had a good basis here on the rail. We haven't had quite the basis delivering to Decatur and haven't had near the basis that we were looking for going to the river. But I think the rail bid's been hot, and I think it's probably going to end up staying hot for quite a while, as long as we have corn, concerns about what the corn market is going to do based upon our weather problems.
Do we need to consider some more hedges in corn at this time, Ellen?
I'm kind of slacking back a little bit and using, if people have not been doing any pricing, I think you might look at a long put situation under the market and hope that you can roll that thing up.
Taking a look at wheat futures, July had a high on the week at the Chicago Board of Trade, a 425 1/2, a low of 389. July wheat settling at 403 and three quarters, down 11 and three quarters from last week. September, 417 and a half, down 11 and a half from a week ago. Paul, is that 11 and three quarters cent price dip this week a buying opportunity on ideas of inflation fears and dollar weakness, or do you want to stay away?
Well, I think probably the prudent thing to do is put a piece of tape over the wheat futures contract and ignore it for quite a while. Historically, you know, this wheat market has a lot of potential, and it's been very popular by some commodity groups and commodity pundits to be short even 2,000 wheat, 7 wheat, in a big fashion. And unfortunately, it's been very cruel to those people to think very far outside the box. And my opinion is that we are in a rather snug situation. The worst thing about the wheat market is this very wide basis between the cash and futures. And that is a really the biggest negative thing in the wheat market at this time.
Alan, what will elevators that typically store wheat out in the western wheat belt do this year when they don't have product?
I think they're going to try to encourage product coming from as far east as they can. I've noticed, to counter something that Paul just said, I've noticed that the wheat basis has jumped around in our area as you go from the Illinois River to the Mississippi, has jumped around, and we were wide at an 85 cent under basis, and that's narrowed into the high 60s. Now, the high 60s is still probably double the 10-year average, but I think that that reflects that there's some interest, at least from the west, to pull wheat out of the western part of Illinois even.
At the Merck, June live cattle a high on the week of 80.50, a low of 79.15. June live cattle finishing the week at 80.32.5, up 92.5 from last week. August feeder cattle at 110.22.5 was up 147.5 from a week ago. June lean hogs a high on the week of 69.97.5, a low of 66.80. June lean hogs finishing the week at 69.40, up 262.5 from last week. July bellies at 84.45 was up 315 from a week ago. Live and feeder cattle contracts hit an 11-week high at the Mercantile Exchange amid new open interest records. But despite this surge, Ellen, are the recent gains in beef prices nearing an end?
Well, not when we see these cutouts as strong as they are. We have beef cutouts on the choice side up at the level that we haven't seen since Labor Day. And so I think it's going to be pretty supportive on these June live cattle up here close to the $80 level if we should see the choice cutouts move into the 155 to 160 range. We could support an $84 nearby cattle price.
July oats had a settlement price for the week of 191.5, up 10 and a quarter from a week ago.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a cool start to May, temperatures in the last week were about 10.5 degrees above normal. In fact, the Memorial Day weekend felt more like the 4th of July with temperatures in the 90s. The warm weather this week did help with crop emergence and growth. The cool start and warm finish balanced out because May ended up with a mean temperature of 62.5 degrees, which is about a half a degree below normal. Rainfall this last week was good with 1.35 inches statewide, which is about 16% above normal. The best news is that the driest part of the state around Quincy finally got some much-needed rain. After below normal rainfall throughout much of April and May, the Quincy Airport reported 3.25 inches between Wednesday and Thursday of this week. These rains helped erase much of the rainfall deficit they had in 2006. What a difference a year makes. Last May, rainfall was only 1.75 inches statewide, about 60% below normal. Our soil moisture status going into June this year looks great compared to a year ago. The National Weather Service forecast calls for a return to normal temperatures in the next 7 days, with highs around 80 and lows around 60, and another shot at rain early to the middle part of next week. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm Jim Angel.
This is Dave Dickey, and our panelists today are Ellen Dearden of AgriView, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. Joining us today by telephone is Brian Hoops, President and Senior Market Analyst of Midwest Market Solutions in Yankton, South Dakota. Brian can frequently be heard on radio stations across the country, as well as on the DTN doing his own grain market commodity program and the Minneapolis Grain Exchange marketing hotline. Thank you for joining us today, Brian.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on, Dave.
Brian, is the wheat crop coming in at higher yields and better quality than initially thought? And how might it impact pricing action over the next 30 days?
Well, to answer your first question, it is a very variable yields, and it depends upon what part of the state or region that you're harvesting this wheat in. There's been some areas, particularly western Oklahoma, that have yields have been above expectations, pretty much in line with the USDA forecast, and there has been some areas that are just a complete disappointment. So I think if you look at the overall wheat crop, the USDA is probably going to be fairly close as far as their yield production. What they may not have taken into account fully is the abandonment of acres. So we're probably going to see a wheat crop that's going to continue to shrink in size in future USDA reports.
Questions for our panelists, Paul Cooley.
Brian, it's nice to talk to you today. We're seeing a lot of ethanol plants going in here in the Midwest. Is there anything like that going on out in the Dakotas?
Oh, it's going on all over. You know, we're on the on the Iowa border, Nebraska border, where I'm located in South Dakota, and there's a lot of ethanol plants going in. There's a lot of soy biodiesel plants going in the areas as well. And the two biggest factors we've seen is local basis improvement combined with longer-term demand prospects. Everyone knows the USDA forecast record large ethanol industrial usage demand, and that has taken our total demand to an all-time record level.
Matt Bennett.
Yeah, Brian, good to talk to you today. You know, when you look at this corn market, one of the most frequent questions I get from some of my customers is you know, what if we come out with a couple, 3 million more acres of corn? Do I need to have corn priced before we come out with the June acreage report? And you know, it looks like we're already kind of getting fired up with a little weather market potentially. So I guess what's your thoughts on acreage and how much would you like to see producers getting priced here in the month of June?
Oh, good points that you're bringing up. You know, I always tell clients that ask the same questions of me, what they're asking you is, you know, it's not what we plant during the year, it's what we can actually grow. And so what we're going to plant some more acres, no doubt about it. We're shifting several million acres over from the March report to the June. We're going to have more acres, but it's really going to depend upon how much we can grow and what we grow this summer. We're off to a pretty good start. Everything looks great right now. Last year we had a spell in the month of June where we were hot, we were dry, and the corn and beans rallied and actually made their highs last year in the month of June. I think it's possible we could do that similar situation. We're turning into more of a hotter, drier weather pattern right now. Certainly the western corn belt, the western part of Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota, all very dry. I think the month of May was the lowest rainfall total for western areas that I mentioned. So there's some areas that are really starting to suffer at this point. And we are poised, I think, to make some highs during this month. So I think to answer your other part of your question, we're recommending to get about 35 to 40% of your new crop sales in place, but also have those sales covered with some September call options to manage your risk.
Ellen Dearden.
Brian, I want to return to the ethanol issue. I know that there's a lot of plants there, and there's two new ones coming on in North Dakota. How has that affected buying patterns? You mentioned that basis had improved, but are you seeing producers wanting to sell more crop ahead? I'm hearing some rumblings here on ethanol plants being able to buy 2007 crop corn pretty easily?
Producers are more apt to try and sell ahead, especially with the prices where we're at. You know, we have 07 corn above $3, 08 corn, he's even been mentioned as producers wanting to sell as that as well above $8 also. Producers are seeing this as an opportunity to advance some sales at profitable levels for themselves, because you know, over $3 with a reasonable basis is a good area. I believe we are going to buy a lot more corn acres next year. A lot of producers are going to take advantage of these prices in corn, and so we've heard as much as maybe 5 to 10 million acres being switched as far as an increase in corn acres to 07.
Brian, in the past, we get to about 80 million acres of corn, and we hit kind of a resistance level, and, you know, our Midwest is about, I'm going to say conservative, 60, 70% in the real top-producing counties now. Where are we going to get the additional corn acres? Are we going to get them in the Dakotas, or what's your opinion of maxing out corn acres here at the present time?
I guess my opinion would be on that. You know, we are set up from a farm program standpoint to grow corn as far as countercyclical payments, as far as LDP payments. We're geared, and then the producers are geared to grow corn. They can produce tremendous yields in corn no matter what area of the country they're in. Bean yields have not kept up as far as increasing with the corn yields, and so I think we may actually take some acres away from the corn or from the soybean market and add it into corn.
Yeah, I agree with everything we're talking about. As a producer, I also raise corn. I guess I'm looking at the corn's going to have to stay pretty solid, first of all, with the input prices. I mean, we're also talking about raising input prices maybe 10 to 20% based on energy. So I know many of my customers are saying, well, I don't want to get in a big hurry to sell, you know, even 3-10 DS07 corn until we see what's going to happen this year, because in this high demand driven environment, we could, you know, the 07's leading the way right now. So. But my question, I guess, is geared towards beans. You know, we've just raced through all these moving averages. People have been trying to beat beans down all winter. You know, where do you see beans going from here, Brian? And again, I guess I would look for some insight on what you're recommending for your clients who grow beans.
Okay. First of all, I think you brought up a good point about the corn. We should, you know, also mention we've had clients inquire about buying put options for 07 in corn, and I think you can buy a $3 corn put for December 07 for 30 cents, and some see that as a pretty cheap investment or a hedge with letting the upside potential be there and covering the downside at $3 for new crop corn, and that's something we should all look at. As far as soybeans, you know, you have to believe that soybeans have been supported to an extent by wheat prices climbing to where they're at this spring, also corn prices climbing to where they're at. And, you know, it's a real testament to the beans that they can hold above $6 and even rally sharply today despite all the bearish fundamental news that's been thrown at the market. One thing that has not affected the beans adversely and taken us down in the $4 area that some analysts were expecting was the funds have not built a huge net short position in the beans, and I think that's partly because they've been buying corn and buying wheat and have laid away from selling those soybeans so aggressively. I think we're headed higher yet in the soybean market. Despite the ending stocks, I think we have bought some acres away from corn or have detracted away from soybeans and given them to corn this spring, and that's left us with a little bit less soybean acres. You know, we historically have gone to 650, about 17 in the last 23 growing years, so your percentages are November beans are going to hit 650, and I firmly believe that we are going to do that at some point. We have held off on making any new crop sales until we get into that area, and at that point we become a little bit more aggressive about doing that. Old crop-wise, we have 50% re-owned. We've got 70% sold in cash, still owning 30%, and then we have another 50 re-owned with some call options. So we're anticipating prices in the beans are going to move somewhat higher from here yet.
Brian, you didn't, when you talked about support on the bean, the beans themselves, you didn't talk at all about bean oil and the petroleum relationship there, and yet you mentioned a little earlier about new plants, biodiesel plants. Can you talk a little bit about the bean oil?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because petroleum products, especially specifically crude oil, has been one leader on the upside here of bean oil. The traders that are watching crude oil, what they're doing, they're also in there buying soybean oil. And so we're being driven higher in some cases by that bean oil. I think today was an example of bean oil not leading us, but rather funds being short in the meal and in the soybeans, and seeing those weather forecasts that you all mentioned earlier and wanting to get out of those short positions. So this spring we've had support from the wheat and from the corn, but also because of the crude oil moving higher, bean oil has followed it, and then that has also been a supportive feature for beans.
What's the price of farmland out in Yankton, and what's your take on the values?
It's climbing just like anywhere else. 10 years ago, good farmland here could be bought for $300 to $500 an acre and rented for $40 to $50. Now you're looking at $2,300 to $2,500 land for the same type of land, and that is actually even being turned away and saying that's not enough money to purchase that land. And the land in this area is very fertile, very good land. You can grow 200 bushel corn here. You can grow 50 plus bushel beans. So it's good land. And it's continuing to rise and rise and rise because of demand from producers wanting to expand their production in this area, but also in the Nebraskans and Iowa areas as well.
Brian, thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thank you for having me on.
Brian Hoops, President and Senior Market Analyst of Midwest Market Solutions in Yankton, South Dakota. And now a chance for a final word from our panelists, Ellen Dearden.
Continue to watch these outside markets. So long as the metals and the petroleum market can hold together, I think we've got more upside in the beans.
Matt Bennett.
I think we're all going to have to strap our seatbelts on and take a wild ride. I think it's going to be volatile, and we were talking before the show not to go short beans. So buy put if you're worried about it.
And Paul Cooley.
I saw this in the Wall Street Journal. The biggest risk is not understanding it.
We would like to thank our panel, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids. Funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. On the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
While many other radio stations have eliminated or severely cut back on the agricultural service they provide, WILL has made an even stronger commitment to our ag services. This is Les Schulte, Director of Corporate Support. If this information is important to your business and customers, consider supporting this station with your dollars. Call 217-333-0850 for more information on the business programs available for you.